PFAS contamination in the Huron River and other water bodies across the state and country are becoming the emerging environmental issue of the day. One aspect of our growing understanding of PFAS that is perhaps underrecognized is the levels of the forever chemicals being found in our food. I'm David Fair, and this is Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU. Our guest today says there is reason for us to be concerned. Dr. John Meeker is a professor of environmental health sciences at the University of Michigan School of Public Health, and thank you so much for the time today, Dr. Meeker.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we're all aware of the PFAS contamination in the Huron River. It's led to advisories against coming in contact with foam on the river. There's a do not eat the fish advisory as well. Based on what you know, is eating fish from the grocery store any better for us?
From what we know so far, it appears that although there might be trace levels in the food we get at the grocery store, mm-hmm. for the most part, it's going to be at much lower levels than those they're measuring in, for example, the Huron River and other water bodies in Michigan.
The federal EPA has recommended levels of PFAS be lower than 70 parts per trillion in our drinking water. Now, I'm not aware of any such regulation for our food. Do we know with certainty that some foods do contain PFAS levels above the recommended safety standard?
According to a recent FDA report, where they did a broad sampling of an array of different types of food, a very small snapshot, they concluded that they did not have concerns for health effects at the levels they found. However, that does not include foods that are grown, say plants or livestock grown in heavily contaminated areas. Those for sure would be of concern.
The report you referenced, is that a published report?
It is. It's a lot of the actual raw data is on their website at the FDA.
Okay. Because the Associated Press reported the FDA back in May of this year had written an unreleased report showing that PFOS in foods like chicken, turkey, beef, cod, salmon, shrimp, lamb, hot dogs, at levels up to 865 parts per trillion. Now, that's astoundingly above the recommended levels of ingestion, and there were other foods like prepared chocolate cake that could be even higher with levels of other PFAS-related chemicals. Should that not be an alarm bell for quick and effective study and regulation so we get a better handle on what we're dealing with?
Absolutely. There does need to be more research on health effects as well as at what level we could expect adverse health effects. You referenced the drinking water standard that is not legally enforceable, but many scientists do believe it's not protective enough at 70 parts per trillion.
Right.
So I think we will see in the future the same thing happening with our food. At the time being, FDA has indicated they're not concerned, but that's based on potentially outdated science with regards to health effects. So as we are able to study the toxicity more using various methods in both experimental studies and human studies, to get at this in much more depth. And, you know, we do need to look out for our more susceptible subpopulations, people like pregnant women, children, elderly.
And the elderly, right. Our Issues of the Environment conversation with University of Michigan Professor of Environmental Health Sciences, Dr. John Meeker, continues on 89.1 WEMU. How exactly are the foods we've been discussing becoming contaminated with PFAS and PFOS?
The highest levels are likely to come from being near a contaminated site. So they're finding high levels in relation to manufacturing facilities that have used these chemicals in the past, as well as other specific applications of these chemicals, such as aqueous firefighting foams that have been used on airports, Air Force bases, oil refineries, things like that.
We also know that PFAS is used in a variety of consumer products, some of which we use to cook our food. How significant might that be in PFAS food contamination and the PFAS we're finding in our blood levels?
That's a great question. So this is it's kind of a long story dating back decades. The PFAS chemicals are actually thousands of different specific chemicals,
right,
all in one class. So one way to classify them is by long chain or short chain. So a few decades ago, the long chain chemicals were used in all kinds of consumer products, including food packaging, Stainmaster type of fabric, additives, things like that. So decades ago, I'm thinking the consumer direct exposures were much higher than they are now. And we're seeing that in blood levels measured throughout the nation where levels are going down. However, we can still measure those in the majority of people in the United States population. With that said, moving forward, they have taken those long-chain PFAS chemicals out of many of these products, but they're being replaced with short-chain PFAS products, for which we know very little about their toxicity. So this is going to be an ongoing story of, you know, hopefully not just trading one risk for another.
based on what we do know today, can we assess whether the dangers are any greater than the consumption of the pesticides and herbicides we've already been ingesting with our foods over the last several decades?
That is an active area of research right now. Historically, we've only studied one or a couple chemicals at a time. So, as you're saying, as we go about our lives, we're exposed to many different classes of potentially harmful chemicals. And the science is just now trying to figure out how do we study what the health effects of those are, if they might be acting with one another to impart even more toxic effects when the exposure occurs at the same time compared to just at the individual level.
Now, I'm assuming, like those other chemicals we do ingest, it's not just the one drink of water or one contaminated hot dog. It's the accumulation of the chemicals in our bodies over time and the impacts we don't yet understand.
That's correct. And the levels in these media are only one part of the equation. The
right.
other part is human contact and consumption. So you have to think about the whole distribution of the population. There may be people at the end of that distribution that are eating or consuming more of these contaminated products than they should be, and unknowingly so. So as a society, we really need to clamp down and get a grasp on, you know, what's in our food and water, and how do we make it as safe as possible.
Once again, this is Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU. And Dr. Mika, let's talk a little bit about solutions. Might be hard to do with so much unknown, but what are some of the measures we might take right now to help limit PFAS exposure through our food?
Again, I'm going to give this a more of a historical context in that we do see levels going down over time. The best data we have is in human blood, but I would assume the same is happening for these common food products that aren't associated with a specific contaminated site. But as you say, there is a lot more work to be done. Ideally, we would be down to zero or non-detect for all types of food. There are some promising results from remediation efforts in various locations where they have seen dramatic decreases in the amount of these chemicals entering wastewater or rivers through wastewater, for example, which then lead to levels in fish and so on and so forth. So there's a high costs associated with this, but it is doable.
And it's also going to take a sense of political will. And while these issues wind through the political and bureaucratic systems and they formulate regulation based on existing and forward-moving science, what do you see as the short and longer-term dangers because of lack of quick action?
Well, as we try to figure this out, obviously these chemicals are in food and water in various locations. And as we've seen with other historical contaminants or legacy contaminants, the more we find out about these chemicals, the more we study them, a lot of times the acceptable levels that we're willing to expose our populations to go down. So the water level of 70 parts per trillion, I expect that to go down in the future. By how much, I'm not sure, but most of the scientific community at this point does agree that's too high. So as you mentioned, it's going to take a lot of public demand and political will to get this accomplished.
As we move forward from here, what will you be working on in relation to PFAS and food?
My research focuses on human exposure to these chemicals, of which, you know, food and water for PFAS in particular is a very important route of exposure. And then I use what we call epidemiology studies to look at what these exposures might be doing in relation to health effects. I focus primarily on pregnant women and children. So we have populations we follow where we measure the exposure and look for adverse outcomes to arise in these populations.
Well, as you progress with your research, I would love to have you back on and we can tell everybody what you found.
Okay, that would be great.
That is Dr. John Meeker, a professor of environmental health sciences at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Issues of the Environment is produced in partnership with the Office of the Washtenaw County Water Resources Commissioner, heard each Wednesday on your community NPR station. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti.